podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Yo, it's the Combine Podcast. Hello and welcome back to the Copac Podcast. I'm joined here today by Mick, Jay and Wahomi from Yanks of Cop. And today we're going into the Twitterverse once again. So we'll get right into it. First one, Diogo Jota's first five starts for Portugal have included 6 goals and 2 assists. Off to an absolutely flying start for Portugal. Obviously, the goal-scoring form we've all wanted to see, you know, over the break. Nice to see him getting back amongst the goals so consistently and showing his talent off on an international stage. Mick, what do you reckon his importance is going to be coming back into this last little stretch of the season now?
Huge, and it's nice that he's getting these goals and assists for Portugal, so it's playing them nicely into form for us, because obviously we've got Arsenal coming up, we've got Real Madrid coming up, we've got some big games coming up, so the more he scores, the more he plays, the better, really, for us. I'm surprised how good he is in the air. Like, a load of his goals have been headers, haven't he? And it's just like, fucking hell, he is actually like a beast. And it's just made up to have him. And if he keeps up that type of form, then it's all better for us. And then coming to a key time of the season where we need him to be getting those goals, I can't wait for the game. It feels like ages since we've played a game of footy. That's why and these pods don't seem as frequent. But yeah, we'll be getting back into it soon. So I'm hoping Hot is going to be or Jota or whatever his fucking name is going to be a big part of that.
All right, well, homie, is he the key to a top four run to finish the season?
Yeah, I think like we missed him badly, obviously, early in the season when he was injured. You know, I think if Joel was fit, we'd still be in the title race. That's how highly I rate him. So I think him coming back and just, you know, carrying Portugal realistically shows how good he is. You know, I think what I like about Joel is he's different. He makes runs that the other strikers don't make runs. Like, he's always going, he'll go to near post, he'll peel off his mark and try and get headers. You might not see Mane, Salah or Firmino kind of making the same runs, so he gives us something different. So I feel like going into, say, the Arsenal or Madrid game, he's going to offer something completely different that Madrid aren't expecting from us. And I feel that I've seen a lot of Madrid fans actually say they're not that bothered about Jota. So I think if he plays, it's going to be a big surprise for them. Like, they're going to be focused so much on Salah or Mane, and they'll forget Jota. And as you've seen, as Mick said, he can score headers, score his right, his left foot, he can create. You know, so I think, like, keeping Jota firing and fit is crucial 100% to our top four and also us going far in the Champions League. And with Jota, we've got a chance.
All right, well, he was kind of a bit of a out-of-nowhere signing this past summer, but it almost seems like Liverpool can't play without him, can't score without him at the moment. So, Jay, do you just want to sum up what he's done for this squad so far this season?
Give him a kick up the arse, and that's what we've wanted. So, yeah, I say that because, obviously, he's put pressure on the front three to start. Do you know what I mean? So, and that's, you know, we knew he was going to be that rotation striker, but we didn't realise how good he would actually be, did we, really? You know, it's... We all knew what a good player he was for Wolves, but, you know, it's to step up Liverpool. So it's really pleasing to see the progress he's made, and yeah, long may it continue.
All right, well, we're going to stick with the striker situation, and obviously it is an international break, so there will be rumours of returns of certain players, and this man has... This man has not been one of the guys that's been missed out on those rumours. Luis Suarez, obviously the rumours are heating up, and as this man just responded, Fabinho will. We have Firmino and Origi as options at striker. Who would say no to 1 year of Luis Suarez, gegenpressing, and finishing our chances for once? Well, homie, what do you reckon? Suarez back in the red shirt?
I don't see it. He's not an FSG signing. As good as he's done at Atletico Madrid, and yeah, fair play, he's done really well there in terms of, you know, Barcelona was stupid for letting him go because... You know, he's firing Atletico Madrid to, like, the Liga title. But he's not FSG signing. At 34, the salary he's going to be on. As much as I think Suarez was an amazing player for us, he's the past. And we need to start, you know, looking beyond the Suarez as a continuous of, like, bringing back that romance and thinking they're going to come back to us. Liverpool need a striker that's younger if you're going to bring a forward in. Someone that's forward and actually start reducing the average age of our squad because... We've got an aging squad right now. So to bring a Suarez, it doesn't make sense. On high wages, you'll probably want like a 3-4 year contract. So I don't see anything. I don't see anything. There's rumours. I just think we're getting a lot often leading to the Madrid game. We get a lot of stories from Spain about our players or about our transfers. And it's all just to distract us, you know, because whether it's Suarez, whether it's Coutinho, whether it's Madrid wanting Mane or Salah, or today is us wanting Depay, Marcel reporting that we're after Depay. It's all just to try and like destabilize the club and cause distraction. So I don't buy anything in the Suarez transfer.
Just before, sorry to cut you off there, Tim, breaking news right now. It's just been announced that Paul Gorst has just tweeted now that LFC's owners, FSG, have tonight announced a £538 million investment deal with Redbird Capital. The deal has actually been completed. The American group said the deal will enhance our ability to pursue future growth opportunities in a more accelerated way. So that is breaking news right now as we've gone live to that. It's FSG. That it's a deal that we've all known that's been going through. So, Tim, let's go to you for your reaction on that one. Wow.
Well, it certainly opens up a door to all these young striker rumours that have been floating around for a year and a bit now, the Mbappe, the Haaland stuff. I don't know if that will all go towards transfers, obviously, that I'm sure there'll be splits. I'm sure that some of it will go towards expanding Anfield and so on and so forth. But if the majority of that goes to transfers, I'm expecting to see a bit of an overhaul and a bit of, as Wahomi mentioned, a bit of a youth movement into the squad. I think that it's if we were going to do it, I think now's the season. I think coming off of the season we've had, and obviously it's not finished, I think we're all excited for what the potential of the Champions League has to offer yet. But at the same time, we would all like to see a bit of a younger average age in this squad, I reckon, and something that's going to push us towards being more consistent over the next, you know, 5 to 8 years rather than just over the next 2 to 3.
Well, I'll just read a couple of the points from the article that Ghosty's just put up. Redbird Capital acquire more than 10% of Liverpool owners' company. The agreement will see Redbird invest $750 million or £538 million into FSG to enable them to continue operating at the cutting edge of Premier League football at a time when finance across the globe, coronavirus pandemic, blah, blah, blah. Now, it's based on an evaluation which also sees, obviously, LeBron James and his associates coming on as well. We all know that's been going on for a long time anyway. Now, obviously, it's just to go, the money is going to be invested throughout FSG. So this isn't just £538 million that's being invested into Liverpool Football Club. So we need to stress that it's not £500 million going into Liverpool's back pocket. It's going to the whole of FSG. But Mick, obviously, it's a positive, isn't it? Because if FSG are getting more money from somewhere else, the domino effect should land with Liverpool, shouldn't it? But I don't think that's immediately going to get us an Mbappe or a Haaland, is it?
No, and especially after I read something earlier this week about financial fair play, that being lessened. I don't know if that's this year or next year, but it's starting to phase out potentially. So that I don't know if that kind of goes hand in hand with that we might see a bit more money being spent by us and not just buying to sell, but just going out there and just making a statement by making big signings. That might be the case. We just don't know at this moment, but it's definitely an option if like you said, the likes of LeBron James and all these other people who are coming in and maybe getting involved with stuff like that can have albeit maybe not a massive influence, but still influences people's decisions and decision-making behind closed doors and meetings. So, yeah, it's you've got to look at it as a positive up until it's not. And that's the way we've got to look at it, because FSG have had a lot of questions thrown at them, and we've shut them up with winning a few trophies in the last couple of years. And I think there'll always be a load of FSG out people, but until a time when it starts going really drastically wrong, it may be after this season, if that does happen, fucking hopefully not, then the questions will be warranted. But at the moment, it looks like they're doing things in the right way for me anyway.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Well, mate, in terms of like the project itself, you know, Mick just said the likes of LeBron James being attached to FSG now and this Redbird Capital. I'd rather be a part of this project than not a part of it. You know, whether Liverpool are getting that, you know, we don't know how much of that £538 million they may get. But it's nice to be part of this project, and it's an exciting time, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I read up a bit about that Jerry Cardinal, who's owner of Redbird Capital. And he was talking about how, like, I think in America he's monopolized the TV rights and how he wants to kind of replicate that at Liverpool, like get to the point where, you know, like, he helps Liverpool dominate the TV rights in terms of, like, getting a larger portion of, like, TV revenue in terms of Champions League. I think he's over a vision as well. He wants to do a Super League and kind of create that Super League, but obviously not the detriment of smaller clubs. So I think his vision is that, and also he does a lot of analytics. So I think it comes in link with that Converse Court. I think we recently signed up to the new analytics program recently that I saw recently at the Echo advertised. So I think in the long run, it's not going to give us injection of money in the club in that sake, because it's in red, it's in FSG, it's not Liverpool. So it's not like red, because even like Red Sox, they're not going to see an injection of money from this thing. So I think people should realise that it's like, it's not like, if they were suggesting Liverpool, they were invested in Liverpool and bought a bigger share of Liverpool. So I think that way, but I think what we'll do is the fact that, you know, they want to create like the Red Bull model, because I think Red Bird Capital own Toulouse. So they want to create like that thing where, you know, you have like Red Bull have it with Salzburg and Leipzig. So they want to create that with us. So I think that'd be really good. If we had that something with Toulouse where we could send our youngsters to them and then get them football time in France. And then if that doesn't work out, we can sell them for big profits. Because obviously that, you know, that's a strategy that's really worked for Salzburg and Leipzig, where they're able to sell players for big money. So if we can bring that in, I think that's the way forward. You know, that's what Man City have done. They own so many different, or the owners of Man City own so many different football enterprises or sports. So they're able to do that. So I think that's going to benefit us. So I think we might not see the immediate effects now, but in the long term, we will. But obviously, for some people, that's not going to appease them, because obviously they're going to want to see an Mbappe or an Haaland kind of transfer this summer. And that's going to be the thing where we do get it or not. I don't see it, but you know, that makes sense. You're always going to get FSG because FSG outs, because they feel that our owners aren't like an Abramovich or, you know, or Sheikh Mansour, where they're spending like 100 million. So that's that. I think that you're always going to get that. But like, I agree with you, you know, Jay, I think it's exciting to be part of the project. So let's see where it brings to the club.
Absolutely, mate. Yep. Right, Tim, that was the breaking news out of the way, mate. Crack on with the Twitterverse.
Absolutely, no problem. Actually, we're going to stick with some financial stuff, but it is more to do with the kits. So this is supposedly the two league kits, the home and away for next season. Now, obviously, they would have been passed around several group chats at this point. It's not new news. But, Mick, I'll come to you, mate. Initial thoughts on those kits. What do you think?
I like them, to be honest. And I think it was the yellow one in that picture as well. But there's a yellow one floating around as well, isn't he? Which is, yeah. I mean, I agree with Jay that the white one should be more ecru than white, because I think that would look so much more better. So much more, fucking hell. I speak good England, don't I? Much more better. It would look a lot better if it was
a crew.
I can't speak today, boys. But no, I think the design's decent. I mean, we always see these floating around, don't we, on Twitter and social media, like fan mocked up ones that usually look a lot better than what we actually get. But if they're going to be the ones that you've just shown in the picture, then I'd be happy with that. And I think whatever you see Van Dijk in the kit, you're like, yeah, that's a nice kit. And I think, I think at the end of the day, kits make the memories that you're making the kit is what it's all about. If we go on to win the title again next year in that kit, then it'll always be synonymous with us being boss. So, nice kit, albeit. But in regards to the white one, I've seen a lot of people saying that the stripes on it are a bit too similar to Man United. And I was like, well, that's quite Liverpool as well, though. In our past, our away kits, we've had that quite a lot over the years. I mean, Jay will probably tell you the exact years because I can't remember, but there's quite a few where we've got that.
2011!
for one. But I think that if they're the ones, then I'm more than happy with them because I think they're nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, the Man United thing was actually something I was going to bring up and actually ask Jay about, because he is the kit man himself. But yeah, I sent these over to my dad and asked him for his opinion, and he much preferred the yellow and red over the white, red and black jersey, just because, as he put it, red, black and white tends to be more Man United than it does Liverpool, and especially in recent memory. But Jay, thoughts on the kits?
Yeah, I mean, with the red one, if you bring them back up again, Tim, what I would say about that red one is I'm not too keen on the sort of the brighter red of it. If it's true, if that was white, I would, that would be up there in one of the top 10 kits ever, because of the white, if it had white on it. But because it's a two-tone red, I'm not a massive fan. But like Mick said, it's the memories that you make. I didn't really like the 2019 home shirt. Wasn't really a big fan of it, but we won the Champions League in it. So again, it's going to hold a lot of memories for us now. And I think with the away one, the people are kicking off about the red and the black. If you want to look back at the Premier League, 2004 was away kit, had red and black and white on it as well. 2011, like I said, red, black and white was on there as well. So it isn't just a new thing for people. It has actually been there in quite a bit. Chris Kelly, spot on. I'd wear a bin bag with a lima bird on it. Absolutely spot on. You would, wouldn't you? Because, you know, people kicked off this time last year about the Nike shirt, didn't they? But it was one of the biggest selling ones ever. So there's this argument which will, you know what I'm like, boys? I could go to town on this thing about the grown men wearing kit things, and Chris Kelly's. I've had conversation with Chris about it. People who get really thing about the kit are the same people that don't buy it. So if you're not going to buy it, then just shut up. Do you know what I mean? That's my whole point about it. I will buy it, no doubt. I'll probably buy both of them. But I love what Brian Connolly said in the comments, and what Yuki said as well in California, that the yellow one. I think the yellow one, if it's true, is absolutely spot on. I think going with the yellow, with the red, it harks back to the 70s and 80s. And I say this all the time, Dawn, in the group chat. Every season we need at least one kit that's either white or yellow, so it doesn't clash. Fuck around with the third one as much as you want. Blue, turquoise, orange, do what the fuck you want with it. But at least keep one of them white or yellow, or a crew. But I'm never going to get a fucking a crew shirt, ever. Never. But yeah, mate, if that yellow one's, yeah, that yellow one's spot on, if it's true.
Yeah. My homie, anything to add?
No.
Not really. I think I'll say this, like, obviously, you know, it's Nike shirts. Nike shirts are never always the best. So, you know, they're not like Adidas, where you get like really good low designs and stuff. So I think people need to understand, you know, Nike aren't going to be like New Balance in terms of the kit designs. So, you know, they're good enough. And, you know, like, there's more things to worry about the kit than the kit, you know.
That's true. Good point.
True. All right, so we are going to go to another tweet about another aging striker, and the reason is because I have read on Twitter this week that Jurgen Klopp was looking for an experienced striker to fill a gap on the bench to come in and change games, and another one has become free. I think he's pretty good, this guy. He's all right, you know. So, yeah, obviously wish he had come to Liverpool in the first place rather than playing for Man City, established in 2008. But now that obviously it's Jurgen Klopp has made it clear. I mean, as fans, we've all spoken about the fact that we would like more of a youth input into this team. You know, we've all said that we're a little bit worried about the fact that the front three are kind of leaning into their 30s now. Not that that's a bad thing in actual life, but in football it is, unfortunately. Homie, Suarez or Aguero, who would you rather see in a red kit?
Suarez.
Yeah, they go two words out of mouth. The reason why I'd say Suarez is because he's fitter. Aguero is injured too much. You know, there's a reason why Man City didn't renew his contract. That's why his contract ran down. They didn't get terms on it. So I personally, again, as well, I think obviously Aguero is one of the best strikers ever played in the Premiership. And I was gutted under Benitez. We didn't, that Hickson Gillett didn't back Benitez to buy Aguero back then, because he would have been amazing when, you know, we should have got him with Atletico Madrid, because he was amazing then as well. So so I think, like, now, would I want him at Liverpool? No, because I think he's injured too many times. And plus, his wages are going to be ridiculous, you know. And for someone who's going to be playing that little games and on that high wages, it'd just be like having Matip or a Keita, or one of those players, you know, just in high wages. So I think I want a big striker, but I want someone that's younger. That shows long-term planning rather than someone who's, you know, as good as Aguero is. How much football did you play last year? So, you know, can we really afford a guy that's going to be in like 240k or something like that on our bench, who's playing as much as he did for City? So I think it's a romantic thing. I think Aguero is better going back to Argentina, or, you know, if you can go back to Atletico Madrid and, you know, one of those teams who retire there. But otherwise, for Liverpool, I'd give it a miss.
All right. Well, I've got an interesting question for you, actually, Jay. Is this, you know, we've seen, obviously, we're fully expecting Man City to go into the market this summer and replace Aguero with another top-range striker. But at the same time, that obviously isn't, you know, a guarantee. That leaves City without, outside of Jesus, really a world-class striker. And Jesus dives in and out of form, you know, from game to game. He's missing one game and he'll pop up with a couple of goals the next. So are we moving? I mean, we've seen it from Liverpool with Firmino. Are we moving towards teams now moving away from top class centre forwards and goal getters that into kind of wingers being the main goal scorers in football these days?
Yeah, I mean, it's 6-1, half a dozen the other, mate. I think there's been a lot of it, and the shift has been... I mean, I never thought the football would ever move away from 4-4-2. It was always your two top strikers, and now it's like everybody plays 4-3-3, and that's the thing when the way this generation has moved on, because you've got a generation now that plays football when they pick up a control pad, when they play through, because they want to be the heroes, and that's how it works. And you get a lot of more skillful players now, and it has benefited the game. You see, you know, look at the likes of Trent. He's such a skillful right back, and the way he's learned and developed his game is the way it's changed from a generation to a generation. So I do think that the game's moving forward, and it is great. It's exciting to have those front three lads that are very, very exciting. There has been, over the years, the less and less of the out-and-out striker. That has been happening a lot less. And you are getting the likes of Haaland, who is... He now can play across the front three. Sancho had played a lot up front directly. Now he's playing on the wing, and he's been dominating from there. Salah at one point for Fiorentina was one of their main strikers, and obviously he's now very versatile. So it all depends, doesn't it? Three up front is definitely the way to go. But I do miss the old days of an Owen or a Fowler or a Torres. Just someone to put the ball in the back of the net, just clean. And Aguero is that. Aguero's like you stick him in the penalty box, and good things happen. Van Nistelrooy was the exact same. It's very rare Van Nistelrooy scored a goal outside the area. You know, it's that type of poacher, and that's one of the things that I would love to see Liverpool get, because we all love Firmino to do that. But like you said, Tim, the wingers are smashing it in anyway. But yeah, it's if Suarez wanted to come back for and lower his wage, bring it on. Bring it on. Do you know what? That's only made fucking worse thanks to him up there. Because all the fucking Suarez goals he's been posting this week. he's wet me whistle.
That is very true. But then again, who doesn't love watching some of those goals? They are completely... Exactly. They are unbelievable, some of the things he was doing at the club. Mick, we are going to give you a miss with this one, but we'll come to you first here. So James Pearce reporting that Firmino is back at training at Kirkby and in contention for Arsenal away on Saturday. So, the dilemma that we've all been talking about for a while here, who are you starting up top, or is there a change of formation this weekend?
I think I'd keep Bobby on the bench, to be honest. I think I'd stick with Hotter again, especially after we've just been talking about his good form for Portugal. So it'd be silly to take him out of that. I mean, you could play all four, but I don't know if Klopp will. It just depends on what he's feeling. But I think this Arsenal game is quite big, because I feel like if we do lose this one, then we do then put all our eggs in one basket and go all out on the Champions League. If we're not already, but yeah, it's gonna be a difficult one, because he has been key, but for huge parts at his time at the club, and he's gone through a bit of a dip in form at the moment, which is to be expected when he's playing that often So I'm hoping that maybe this break's done him good in a way. A good thing that he got injured, because he's had a bit of a time away. He can come back, recuperate, and maybe be a bit fresher, if that makes any sense at all. But I don't think he starts this one. I think he's on the bench and maybe comes off towards the end, and hopefully bags one. That'll be nice.
All right, Jay. What effect do you think the Real Madrid game next week has on team selection for this Arsenal game on the weekend?
Yeah, quite a lot, mate. I was thinking about that yesterday. I was thinking, what do we do? Because you can't put all your eggs in the one basket, can you? I mean, you can after Saturday if it goes fucking pear-shaped over the weekend with results and stuff. But it definitely will have a bearing on it, mate, because obviously I know the game's been brought forward now, which is good, and gives us that extra little bit of rest. But, you know, it's like Mick said, everyone's sort of slowly starting to come back fit again now, when we're sort of like, We've definitely got the stronger team out of the two sides. But again, I think you're just going to have to go straight. I think this might be a session where you play your best 11. You play the 11 you want to start against Madrid for 60 minutes. And if it goes well, then that's when you start making changes. Or you do it the other way around. Do you know what I mean? So I'm glad I've not got the headache. I'm glad I'm not the manager to make these decisions when there's millions of Liverpool supporters judging me. When I make changes. So it'll be interesting, mate, but it's a massive week for the club. This time next week, we could be on cloud nine or ready to fucking jump off a bridge. Hopefully it's the former.
All right. Well, Wahomi, what do you reckon? Is it likely to be Firmino hot on the bench, or do you see, is there a world where either Mane or Salah actually starts on the bench and we see a Firmino and Hotta in the starting lineup?
I think what is one of them, I think Klopp's going to go strong, because I think he's not going to throw all his eggs in one basket. I think the only changes we'll see in midfield, I think you might see a Jones or a Naby starting and then resting Thiago and Gini for Madrid. I think for Madrid, it's a tough one because, you know, some people have said that, you know, because, you know, Madrid play the ball at the back, that you need someone who presses. And I think while Jota's a good presser, he's not in sync in terms of pressing as a Firmino does. But then Jota scores goals and Firmino doesn't really score goals. So it's kind of like, where do you go? I would, for me personally, go with Jota. I'd play Jota both games, because I would rather us get the win against Arsenal than take Jota off and bring Firmino off to see out the game. And obviously he has to start, you know, I think we need to score in Spain. We have to get an away goal in Spain. You know, so, you know, no matter what happens there, we have to get an away goal. And I think the Atlanta away is a great game for us to kind of replicate, where we just destroy, you know, we blitz them in the counterattack. And I think Madrid aren't a team that play low block, or they can't play low block. So they're a very attacking team. And I think also they're going to have Vasquez and Mendy on the flanks as wing-backs. Because I think something they played like three at the back. So I think, like, either way, Bobby should not. I wouldn't start Bobby in either games. I'd have him come off the bench both, because, you know, he's only come back from injury, and there's no point in like dampening Jota's hot form. So I would go strong for both games, because I think we have to at least go for this Arsenal game, because in the West Ham game, although Arsenal did a great comeback, West Ham should have been out of sight. You know, even before Arsenal scored their third goal, West Ham missed a great chance where they should have gone like 4-2 up. So Arsenal defence is there to be got at, you know, so I would go strong.
Okay, well, it's certainly an interesting one, because for me, as much as obviously the front three have had their issues getting goals, I think that, you know, the game against Madrid is going to be won in the midfield. I think that that's where all of their real quality lies, in the center of the park. So for me, as long as we can field our strongest three midfielders, I think we'll be able to cope with what Madrid will have to offer. And obviously, I think our wing backs will be more than enough to deal with what they. And I'm actually Kabak and Phillips, based on current form, and Kabak's been brilliant for Turkey recently. So, yeah, I think that you start as strong as possible, and then after about 60 minutes, depending on what the score is against Arsenal, you make some changes, or whatever the score is, you make some changes, because I think at this point, you know, if you, top four is kind of a bit of a stretch. We'd have to have a lot of things go our way, whereas I think the Champions League is still winnable from the position we're currently in. And the last thing you want is to have pressure back on you coming back to Anfield or wherever the game is going to be played against a Madrid team that is experienced and will be wanting to prove the fact that they'll be able to win a Champions League without a certain Cristiano Ronaldo playing for them. All right. So anyway, moving on. Last tweet here, fellas. It's an age-old argument, and obviously a certain someone pitched in. If I'm a manager, I'm taking Frank because he's going to get me 20 goals a year. Neither of us two will get me 20 a year. Fellas, Gerrard, Scholes and Lampard, I'm sure it's an argument that's going to rage on for the rest of time. Jay, thoughts?
Oh, do you know what? I feel like I'm 16 again. And I'm in just finishing school and having the same argument again. I wish this debate had just fuck off. I really, really do. All three of them were fucking brilliant. All three of them had their own attributes, which made them great players. So I might plead the fifth on this one, fellas, because I'm not arguing the debate. Rio should know better. I mean, if I was Scholes, I'd be ringing Rio up and go, "You fucking joking me? You were more with me than you did Frank at West Ham." You know what I mean? So, yeah, I don't know. I don't really, can't be asked answering this question, I'll be honest, because for me, I'm always going to pick Gerrard. Of course I am. If he's going on about 20 goals a season, why does he look at Steven Gerrard from 2004 to 2009, 2010? I'm sure he got 20 goals a season every year then when he was playing in an advanced position. So, depends where you're going to play them. But, again, could just appreciate all three. Why couldn't Sven play 4-3-3? There we go. That would have won us the fucking World Cup in 2002. I said, no, Gerrard was injured for that World Cup, so let's say 2006. There we go. Sorted. Right.
Well, anything to add to that?
I do agree. Like, I think this is a, like what Jay said, I think it's a pointless argument. I think also you have to remember, like, they're playing different teams. Like, you know, Lampard played around better players. Not taking anything away from him. He was outstanding at Chelsea. You know, I think he was the first really a proper attacking midfielder that was banging 20 goals a year, on the regular. So he set it off for like players around Europe. But Scholes, he was phenomenal, you know, at Madrid, Man United. You know, when you're getting played like Zidane saying that he's one of the best players I've ever played against, Paul Scholes, you know, you've got to stand up and take notice of that. And obviously you've got in, you know, Zidane saying as well the same thing about Gerrard, one of the best players he's played. So I think they're all great players in their own right. And you know, each club is going to be biased towards their own player overall, you know. So it's just one of the things, we just have to admire them rather than doing this debate who's better, you know, because, you know, you'd be here all night arguing over, you know, who's a better player.
Yeah, true.
So the real question, Mick, is why didn't England win a World Cup with these three in the midfield?
Because England is shite. Too many. Well, Gary Neville, that I spoke about it, haven't he? Saying there was that team rivalry, they couldn't get over it in the England camp. They were all like going off into separate. The Man United lads, Chelsea lads, Arsenal lads, Liverpool lads would all be separate, and it'd just be a subconscious thing because they didn't want to. They couldn't really. I think England now, you can see it's more of a team than that golden generation where, unfortunately, because obviously that team would have won shitloads if they would have just put league differences aside and just thought, fuck it, let's just play to our maximum. But then you're playing players out of position. I think Scholes was left mid. You had Gerrard left mid as well. You had Lampard obviously bombing on forward. Gerrard had always sit, whereas when I was watching the games, I wanted Gerrard to be on the end of those passes and threading it through and getting on the end of them. But it was Lampard doing it, and that's why he scored more goals. If you ask me who the better player is, it's Gerrard. Overall, I think most people would agree that overall, all attributes, it's Gerrard. Lampard, I don't know, I still think Gerrard's a better goal scorer, but Lampard, you can't deny the stats. Like, he had loads of boss players around him, and Scholes obviously dictated the tempo so well, and he was a fucking king at that. So
didn't Lampard finish, he was Chelsea's all-time top goal scorer, isn't he? I mean, that's amazing, isn't it? I mean, I know he took a lot of penalties and stuff like that, but that's a phenomenal achievement for a midfield player. It is amazing, isn't it? But
I think you just said it, Chris just said it there. Lampard got 20 plus because he was basically the second striker with no pressure to get back and defend. And you look at the teams, obviously we grew up watching, like with Gerrard in, he was amazing, but the players he had around them, fuck me. He was having to defend, take set pieces, fucking take the set piece and then get his head on the off on the corner he's just took. Just stuff like that, where he's like, he was doing everything. And it's, if you wanted someone, if we could pick one player in history to step up and make something count when it needed it to, it would be Steven Gerrard, of course it would, because the pressure that he had on his shoulders for so long and just thrived on it. Yeah, Dan, good point, mate. You're able to put Gerrard on the best team of the Champions League era, no skulls or Lampard. Yeah, I think you could do a whole couple of hours on this and analyse and scrutinise every little point, but for me, it's Gerrard by far for what he did in a team that, like 2005, we should have never fucking won that, but it was through Gerrard that we did that, and same yeah. FA Cup as well. Shouldn't have even been possible, shouldn't have even been thought about, but because we had him in the team and he made everyone else and the levels rise, it was doable. So that's why he wins for me. But yeah, England was shit, so that's why they then went on.
Yeah. Well, the difference for me was always the fact that Gerrard could have any team competitive. It didn't matter what was around him. Liverpool were always, you know, a top four team, regardless of who, what, and where was you know, encompassing the Liverpool squad at the time. And people will point out the fact he played with Torres and Suarez and Xabi Alonso. Yeah, but that's three players over the course of, you know, 7 years. So it's not like he consistently had world class around him. Whereas when you can look at the Chelsea and the Man United sides of the time, and those are some of the greatest teams of the Premier League era, not solely because of Lampard and Scholes, but obviously they had their major roles to play. And let's not take anything away from them. They're both superb players. We all hated watching them because, you know, they were a pain in the ass and they were great at their job at the end of the day. So, yeah. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up at that. And just before we go, I'm going to give a massive shout out to Mr. Dale Colin, the goalkeeper for Gibraltar. He's one of my best mates, and he stopped a certain Mr. Haaland from scoring on Norway's visit to Gibraltar. So I just want to give a big shout out. 12 saves, impressive. Well played, mate. Froudy, yeah, 12 saves. 12 yeah. saves. So yeah, he's a brilliant keeper. So just a big shout out to him, mate. Keep doing what you're doing, and don't forget to like and subscribe to the Cop Fight podcast. Because if it's free, and who doesn't like free stuff anyway? So there you go, mate.
I fucking love that. Omi, thanks for joining us tonight, mate. We appreciate
it.
Thanks,
mates. Yeah. Thanks, our lads.
Nice one. See you later, boys.
See you in a bit. Podcast Network.